So, welcome everyone. It seems like, to me, we are quite deep into this retreat of ours. I think this evening is pretty close to the middle of our 3-week practice period here, our coming and going session. I know I've been here a long time. It seemed like an appropriate time to perhaps talk about this particular piece by Katagiri Roshi that is called There Is No End. I've had a few moments like that where particularly long seeming period of zazen, I was quite sure that the jiki had forgotten to set the timer and there really would be no end. He says, if we walk in the desert and cannot see the end, it's not necessary to become irritated. And yet, I find myself irritated at times. And this walking in the desert, generally, my Zen practice seems quite important to me. And I don't usually have a lot of difficulty getting myself to practice. I don't practice every day sitting zazen, but most days it doesn't seem like a burden. But I've gone through a couple of long periods where it was quite difficult. Months where I just really was not interested in practice. I just couldn't seemed to muster any enthusiasm. It seemed like I was not really benefiting much from practicing in this way. And I think it was only Sangha that helped me get through this difficult period. I had taken up meditation practice at quite a young age. I started when I was in high school, and I would go through, you know, periods where I would practice with some friends or by myself, read some books and practice for, you know, a few months or a couple of years, and then it would fall away. You know, I would lose interest or get interested in something else and let my practice go. And then for me, you know, finding this Sangha here with Boundless Way Zen has really made all the difference. For the most part, you know, I've been quite regular with it. But there are these times when it seems quite like a desert. I had an evening, I'm not sure, I don't think it was last night, but maybe the night before, where it was quite vivid for me, this I don't know what. I was just like sitting here in the Zendo, and things had just gone completely dull. I had gone completely dull, and I had no idea exactly what I was doing here and what exactly I was supposed to be doing in Zazen. Even the normal like physical pains, you know, that I get on retreat, I wasn't particularly in pain. My mind, for whatever reason, had stopped complaining. You know, that familiar self-judgment and criticism that I dislike so much, but having it not be there, you know, my old reliable friend, it seemed quite odd to just have everything go quiet and dull. And not at all comfortable, this particular stopping of mind. He says, usually if we don't see the end, we don't know what to do. Or if the end is far away, we become upset. Even in my Zazen practice, you know, there's a certain amount of goal-centeredness, I guess. You know, I want something to happen. And, you know, in periods like this, there just is nothing happening, and I don't like it. He says, when we think of how to master Zazen or attain enlightenment or understand Zazen as taught by the Buddha, we become exhausted. You know, wondering, so, you know, what would it mean to master this Zazen thing, and why is it that I don't seem to be able to do that? And particularly, you know, the coming and going of little flashes of you know, I'll have an idea come up, and I think, oh well, I got to remember that's a good thing I could talk about tomorrow evening, you know. You know, so this has been a really successful round of Zazen here. I got an idea for a talk, you know. And then sometimes it's totally not like that, you know. There's just nothing. And I think, oh, well, you know, it's slipped away. I dimly remember having some idea about Zen and Buddhism, but in this particular moment, it's not at all clear. And he says, sometimes, particularly when we feel lazy, we should indeed reflect on such things. But when those questions make our head ache, we should just forget thinking. Just practice. Just sit there. Bear with whatever is happening. He says, in the Buddha's world, there is no end. Forget about the end and take one step, like an elephant or a turtle. No end to this journey of ours. No end to our delusions. Delusions arise endlessly. So just taking this one step, in whatever direction. Sometimes I feel like, you know, I hit take a few steps in this direction, and I'd say, well, so that doesn't really seem so good. And then I turn and take a few steps in another direction. And, often my life is like that. Huh? And this is practice, I think, constantly reevaluating. Which direction is it that's straight ahead? I know I'm only supposed to go straight ahead. Which way is that? So this is our practice. It is wonderful and beautiful. In this way, let us practice for 3,000 kalpas. Wonderful, beautiful. This willingness to meet whatever difficulty, whatever mood swings, whatever thoughts, whatever emotions, including meeting unwillingness when that's what's arising. Recently, I don't know, a couple of days ago, someone reminded me of these vows for daily life of Robert Aitkins, and I was looking through them, and this particular one, number 7, struck me as relating nicely to the Katagiri piece. I'll read it to you. Aitken says, "When everything loses its meaning, I vow with all beings to honor this intimate teaching that clears my dependence away." This attachment to whatever a light may arise in my mind, when that light slips away again, which it seems to do. This moon of clear mind coming and going, coming and going, as the piece by Sun Tzu says. And this honoring this intimate teaching, everything losing its meaning and making it clear, this dependence on seeing something. This wanting the light. And quite a beautiful thing to just practice with no end in sight, to just take one more step together with all of you. Thank you. So, please sit comfortably and have an opportunity to take a few questions or comments, or whatever might be arising for you. Susan.
I like the line about the elephant in the church. And I wonder, is human consciousness a boon or a burden?
I don't know which.
I'm not sure there's any way to really know that, but you, it's what you have. So let's proceed.
It certainly is a challenging gift, right? Clearly, at least to me, some kind of gift. But the kind you open up and you say, oh! Right? Because we suffer so much with these minds. You know, this certainty, this delusive certainty, so painful that we're separate. And yet I love Katagiri Roshi so much because he sees this beauty too. And we all glimpse that beauty, right? One teacher said that the universe created human beings to appreciate itself. So there's some way that each one of us can appreciate life and in some extraordinary way. Can never understand it, never make sense of it, but, you know, his talk about the beauty of this practice. Some incredible opportunity for all of us.
Sometimes I picture all the animals gathered around talking about us. they think they're so cool. And what if they don't?
Yeah. Thank you, Susan.
Thanks, Susan. Thanks for that talk, Steve, and your honesty about all the ills of Zazen. But it's funny. I've been going through that same setup of, you know, it's never going to end, and I've lost the zest about my work, not about this, but about my job. I'm a college teacher, and I'm at the point in my career where I'm beginning to think, what's the point? Each year, a new batch of students, and they still don't know how to do this, you know. How many times do I have to teach this? And just as with Zazen, when you do, you endure because you must. Because you may not stop. You must. And so you endure without being sure there's any point to it, but you have to keep on. And that happened with my job. I had taught the same course 4 or 5 times. I have to teach it again this spring. I'm thinking, oh, geez, how can I make this fresh for myself? Because otherwise I'll be bored and then I'll bore them. And Tuesday night, very late at night, I got an email from a student who had taken the course the first time I had taught it, who was a graduating senior, and I'd not heard from her again after the semester was over. And it was like a 2-page single-spaced letter in an email about everything that she had been doing since that semester, which she attributed all to that course. And now she's pursuing an MA, and she's going to go on for a PhD, and she's done all this work in social justice. I thought, wow. You know, maybe I could teach this course again. It would be all right to do that. But I was ready to give up. I really was.
Thank you, Libby. Yeah, that's a really good example of how you know, there's no end, right? I mean, there's always a new batch coming along, and yet there's, particularly in our zazen, there's this opportunity to really see how, you know, we're doing what we can do, right? And the fulfillment of knowing that, right? That regardless of circumstances and difficulties or whatever it is that shows up, you know, at least we did what we could do. And that's beautiful. It's wonderful, you know, to have that sincerity and opportunity to use this life force that's given to us in order to do something with it, even though, you know, we don't exactly get anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And there's something, too, about staying beyond when we think we should stay. Right? Because, you know, about 15 minutes, I'm pretty sure that I've gotten what I need out of this period. I think I'll get a cup of coffee. But the gift we give each other is we all vow to stay after it gets boring or after it gets wild, or and it is this staying that we encounter life in some fresh way, even though we're totally stale, we're totally used up, in that place of being used up, in that place of vowing not to look away. Somehow everything can shapeshift, where the next day, you know, where's the dullness? Everything is so clear now, you know, and this impossibly impermanent life here just keeps going and going, but does require something of us to enter, and part of what it requires is to stay. To nail your feet down on the floor and say, I will not move. Do what you want to me. I will not move.
And I think there's something about both these first two comments about how human beings are speculating animals. Mm-hmm. You know, we really make stuff up. Mm-hmm. And so I'm constantly making stuff up about the meaning of my practice. And, you know, creating elaborate fantasies about everything. I think there's something important to just underline about this not knowing, right? And so your student comes, and you didn't know that. but we do, this comes up a lot in meditation practice. People come to us and say, I don't think I'm making any progress. And my first teacher was very clear that you can never know whether you're making progress or not, because there's nothing to compare it to. Only your memory of what you think speculatively is, that's probably not how you pronounce that, how your memory thinks you were compared to your memory, right? I just love that we do that. And part of maturing in Zen is seeing that, oh yeah, I do that. Now, back to this moment. I can't be right. You get it.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. Both of you.
Well, one of the wonderful images of practice, and I think it was from our first teacher too, is that the image of a stream coming downhill and it encounters a boulder. And for a while, it appears that the stream is going nowhere as the water fills up behind the boulder. Nothing's happening. Mm-hmm. And then it very naturally continues. And certainly practice has that quality. There are times when I think, well, you know, it's hopeless. Or other times when, you know, Steve said, I'm really getting it today. You know? I'm getting the hang of this here. I'll stay another day. but those are totally unreliable. I mean, they're just thoughts. But somehow every once in a while that idea that something is happening beyond what I know, that when we commit ourselves to this gradual cultivation, that, you know, walking in the very light rain today you could get wet. You could get very wet if you walked for a long ways.
I feel moved to tell a brief story based on something you said about, you know, it's like getting a gift, and you open it up and you go, oh. At Christmas, our daughter and her husband had watched a video, which they had to show us, of what to do when you get a Christmas present that you don't want. And you open it up and you pull it out and you say, oh, it's a sweater. It's green. it looks like a teapot. It's yellow. Like they're instead of going, oh wow, great, a teapot, because you don't want to be insincere. Unfortunately, it ruined the rest of Christmas because we kept saying, oh look, it's a CD. For me, it felt very zen, you know, that, oh, look, I'm tired now. Oh, look, I'm having a great insight. Oh, look, this could be, right, no big deal. Next, 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 next. But you realize that all gifts are like this. So, many gifts, just right here in this room. Let's sit for a little bit while we enjoy... Or Zen Christmas.